Good morning. May it please the court. As I indicated, I'm Gary Wolnar, and I'm here with Debbie O'Connor. We represent the appellant, JF Enterprises, doing business as Jeremy Franklin Suzuki of Kansas City. This case arises out of the trial court's denial of the appellant's motion to compel arbitration regarding the purchase of a vehicle by the respondent from the appellant. This case comes down to one simple question. Does the claim that the purchase of the vehicle is void for failure to deliver title upon a sale or delivery pursuant to RSMO 301-210 render an arbitration agreement unenforceable? The trial court denied appellant's motion to compel arbitration, holding that no title was delivered, the underlying contract was void pursuant to 301.210, and the arbitration provision, which is to be construed with the other contract documents, is subject to the plaintiff's contract defenses of fraud and lack of consideration and is void and therefore not enforceable. Trial court erred for essentially three reasons. Pursuant to the binding arbitrations from the United States Supreme Court cases of Buckeye, Nitro Lifts, Primer Paint, and Southland Corporation, an arbitration provision is severable and enforceable regardless of the respondent's argument that the underlying contract is void.
And what are you going to enforce if there's no contract?
There is a contract potentially that could be enforced.
But potentially. But potentially. If it's void, then there wasn't ever a contract.
That is not what the case law holds. But the Prima Paint case says that specific question becomes irrelevant if a contract is entered into and a state law makes that void or illegal. For instance, in the Buckeye case, the Florida Supreme Court said the usury contract with the interest rates on those contracts was void as a matter of law. It was illegal. And so the Florida court said just they made that determination on their own where they said that's void. And the U.S. Supreme Court said Florida State Supreme Court holding that because they decided in the first instance that rule, that law in Florida made that contract void, did not mean that the arbitration provision could not be severable from that original. And that's exactly what the U.S. Supreme Court has held in Buckeye, in Nitro Lifts, in Prima Paint.
But they also say contract formation issues are for the courts. And I noticed that while it talks about purchase, I didn't see the word formation in this arbitration provision. Did I miss it there?
Well, no, what the Buckeye Court, Nitro Lift Court says, if you are going to look at the arbitration provision, that's where you have to look at the formation for that. That is severable from the underlying contract. The underlying contract could, in fact, be declared void. And in fact, the Buckeye Court talks about the conundrum that you face by answering that question preliminarily. It says it's not relevant to the issues because
this court has clearly said that contract formation is for the court. And there's no, even if you could delegate it, which is a different question, there's no specific statement that contract formation issues are delegated as opposed to purchase and other issues that may come up.
And you're talking about the contract formation of the whole contract itself.
Or the arbitration clause itself.
Well, there were. That's exactly the point.
It doesn't say formation is delegated. Does that's why I asked you, did I miss some language in there saying formation issues were delegated? I didn't see use of that word.
In the trial courts?
No, in the arbitration agreement.
In this case.
In this case, the arbitration agreement, delegation provision, I believe is in there.
Okay, well. That would be great if you could find it later, or go ahead now, but I'll look again.
Okay. Are there challenges to the formation of the arbitration agreement?
No. There are no specific challenges to the formation of the arbitration agreement, the separate arbitration agreement that was entered into this case. The challenge is to the contract as a whole, the purchase or the sale. There was a contract that was entered into. You had an agreement, you had an offer, you had acceptance, and you had consideration. And then state law came in and said it's void under these circumstances. And that's exactly what the Buckeye Court, the U.S. Supreme Court said. If that's what you're dealing with a contract as a whole, the arbitration provision, or a separate arbitration agreement in our case, stands on its own.
But here they're saying there was no consideration for the contract as a whole because there was no passage of title.
But see, no, that's their argument. But actually, there is consideration. You had an agreement where Ms. Ellis comes in and she says, I want to buy the car. The the appellant says, I want to sell you the car. They have consideration. Consideration was passed because her trade-in was made as part of that whole transaction. So the transaction does have consideration. What happened was, is down the road, if title is not passed, then the court said, well, because they claim title was not passed, it's void. The whole contract is void. But Buckeye and Nitrolift and Primer Paint, the U.S. Supreme Court cases say, in that instance, where the attack is to the contract as a whole, not to the arbitration agreement, there is nothing in this case where the plaintiffs say that the entering into that arbitration agreement itself, it had any defenses available to it. It was never raised by the respondent in the trial court.
Now, your opponent relies on Johnson to say that documents signed contemporaneously should be all construed together. Why doesn't Johnson apply in this case?
Johnson in this case, from the appellant's point of view, is immaterial. Johnson is only applying if somehow, like in the Johnson case, they said that the contract documents, the documents that were signed throughout that transaction, were not merged into, I think it was a retail installment contract, and therefore anything else that wasn't merged into the retail installment contract didn't exist. Johnson is not contrary to this, to our position here. All that Johnson stands for is you can have a contract to sell a car. You can have a contract to finance the car. You can also have, like we have in this case, an arbitration agreement. Those can all be separate documents. If they're signed at the same time, if the retail installment contract has a merger agreement, that doesn't negate anything else. That's all that Johnson says. What the respondent is trying to do with Johnson and say, you have to now take that arbitration agreement and fit it into the contract of purchase.
Well, that's what merger means, that they merge into one contract when they're all signed together.
And even if that's true, because you can talk about severability, you can sever out those, and that's in fact what Nitrotech and Buckeye say is, if you're faced with a position where you've got a contract as a whole, and now someone is challenging that contract as a whole, but not the arbitration agreement,
but
can sever out the arbitration agreement.
But here we're not talking about whether or not you need separate consideration for an arbitration agreement, some of the other things that are raised. It's a single contract, and you have to, under federal law, also not treat arbitration clauses different than you treat other. You have to treat defenses to arbitration clauses like you treat other general defenses, and here they're alleging fraud and lack of consideration, which is a general contract defense and a defense to contract formation. There's nothing, you want us to treat the arbitration clause of that contract differently and specially, which is what we precisely can't do.
No, what those attacks are on the contract as a whole, the purchase contract.
I understand, of which.
Not. Those defenses to the arbitration agreement have never been raised. They were not raised in the underlying case. They were not raised here. And in fact,
they raise it as to the whole, I don't mean to take your time, but they raise it as to everything. It's not like they raised it only as to the concluding paragraph. They said the whole contract, including, therefore, the arbitration clause, had no consideration. So they clearly say it has no consideration and it is fraudulent because that's part of the contract they say had none. You're saying they have to have a separate claim and a separate fraud and a separate left as to the arbitration provision, but they're attacking it as part of the whole contract. So,
and that's exactly what the U.S. Supreme Court said in Nitrolift and the Buckeye cases, is the Supreme Court cases, and those, the Supreme Court in Florida and Supreme Court in Oklahoma said, we have a public policy against these types of cases or these contracts. Therefore, those contracts are void. They don't, they even said in Florida that they're illegal. They don't exist. And that's exactly what happened in those cases, that the argument was made, well, the arbitration clause goes with that contract. If it was void ab initio, it never existed, therefore it doesn't exist. And the U.S. Supreme Court says no. AT&T Conception in those cases say you are to follow Section 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act, and the Section 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act says those individual arbitration agreements, whether they're a provision in the contract or a separate agreement like we have here, those are severable. If the only attack is to the contract, the underlying contract as a whole, and that's the only thing, that's the only thing that was made in this case. And in fact, in their response to our motion to compel in the trial court, their position was, as no title was passed, there was no sale. The sale was deemed void and fraudulent, and as such, since there was no sale and the sale was void, there can be no arbitration provision to which the plaintiff is subject to. They never addressed the issue of the separate arbitration agreement. They never raised any defenses to that. They never suggest that there was anything undue, defenses of fraud, duress, unconscionability. None of those defenses were ever raised specifically to the arbitration agreement itself. And that's exactly what the U.S. Supreme Court said to the federal, to the Florida Supreme Court, that they got it wrong. And that's exactly what the U.S. Supreme Court said to the Oklahoma Supreme Court. You got it wrong. Just because your state law may say that contract is void, illegal, of no force, does not mean a separate arbitration agreement within that is not enforceable. It's severable under Section 2. I see my time is up.
Thank you. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court?
Sure.
The issue before this court is contract formation. Specifically, was there a valid arbitration ever formed between these two parties? And the answer to that is no. The trial court never erred.
Speak up just a little
sorry.
Bit.
The trial court did not err in finding that the arbitration provision specifically lacked consideration and was void. And the trial court also did not err in finding that the arbitration agreement is to be construed with the contract documents, which were also void as title was not passed. JF Enterprises, Jeremy Franklin Suzuki never passed title to Ms. Ellis.
Let me ask you, because I would frame the issue differently. Mm-hmm. I would frame the issue as to whether the U.S. Supreme Court cases require this court to compel arbitration rather than rule on the merits that the contract is void and that that includes the arbitration clause. So the issue is, where our state contract law might otherwise support your argument, does in fact the U.S. Supreme Court precedent compel a different result?
No, I do not believe it does. And the first reason for that is in Granite Rock, a 2010 case from the United States Supreme Court, they specifically deal with the formation of an arbitration agreement and whether that should be severable and enforceable. And in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court specifically said that issues of contract formation is a matter for the courts because the party cannot be compelled to arbitrate unless there was an agreement to arbitrate. And then they went through and looked at the previous cases that the court has considered, including Prima Paint and Buckeye. And they distinguished those cases because in Prima Paint and Buckeye, the parties agreed that there was already a valid arbitration agreement that had concluded or that had formed, and what they were dealing with there is simply the enforceability.
What wasn't in those cases, wasn't the arbitration agreement entered into at the same time as the underlying contract that was alleged to be void?
Yes.
And so why does that not compel us to find the arbitration? Because you don't claim there is anything defective in the formation of the arbitration portion of the contract. You claim the entire contract itself is void.
Well, the two parts of that question. The first one is the United States Supreme Court said arbitration can be compelled unless there is an issue regarding the formation of the agreement to arbitrate or there is a specific challenge to the enforceability of the arbitration agreement itself, and we are raising a contract formation issue. I believe, as to the second part of your question, Missouri contract law does apply, and we have raised the challenge to the arbitration provision, because construing the arbitration provision with the contract as a whole, that is where the issue comes into play. When there is no consideration for the contract as a whole, there's no consideration for the arbitration provision, and that was not formed. Also, as the trial court specifically found in their order, and if you, when you read it, it says that the arbitration provision lacked consideration, was fraudulent, void, and therefore non-enforceable. So the trial court made a specific finding that the arbitration provision itself lacked consideration.
So how is that different from Buckeye and Nitrolift?
They're different from Buckeye and Nitrolift because in those two cases, though there is already a validly formed arbitration agreement and contract that exists.
What wasn't the a claim that the contracts were also void on their merits, and the court found that that was should be left to the arbitrator to reach that issue?
I believe in those cases it was more of an enforceability issue of whether those contracts could be enforced, not whether they were formed at all.
So you're saying both dealt with contracts being void, but there was a difference there. It had to do with usury, which as a matter for legal policy reasons, voided the contract. But here you're saying there was never a contract in the first instance because of fraud or no consideration.
There was never a contract here because there was no consideration. In Missouri case law regarding section 301.210 specifically provides that title is the consideration in the sale of a vehicle.
But there is consideration. I mean, isn't this actually a failure to perform as opposed to a lack of consideration?
I believe with section 301.210, the delivery of the title is the essence of the contract. You don't go and buy a car without getting a valid title for this. And so I believe that is the consideration that the court should be focused on and considered. Any sort of other consideration that came into play here, whether it was, as J.F. Franklin raised for the first time today, the trade-in value, none of that comes into play unless there was actually an agreement to sell the car and to purchase the car on between the two parties.
Could you have not brought a suit to enforce the contract? And if you had, then wouldn't, I mean, why? It seems to have aspects of both. How does this court determine, finally, if it's a formation issue or an enforceability issue?
I think the court should first determine the contract formation, because in order for anything to be enforced, whether it's the contract, the arbitration provision, is there has to be some sort of contract that exists. And I think going as JF Enterprises wants to go on and talk about the contract, the enforceability of it, there still has to be a valid contract that was formed. And as the trial court found, title was not passed, thereby making the contract entirely void.
As Judge Russell indicated, though, isn't that kind of a retroactive voiding of the contract for failure? After you execute the contract, you, as part of the transaction, you have to give the title. And you don't give the title as you're signing the document. So didn't the legislature void the contract for not doing an act subsequent to the signing of all the documents and entering into the agreement?
No, I think that's part of the consideration as a whole and part of making the agreement, because the entire purpose of buying a car is to have a car with a lawful valid title to it, so you can go and register it and lawfully operate it. And so I think the entire issue that title is essential in this case, because selling an individual a car without a title provides them with essentially nothing. They can't drive the car, they can't license the car, they can't do anything with it. And so the title is a necessary aspect in this in the sale of a vehicle.
You make a separate argument, I believe, about non-mutuality of the contract, but opposing counsel says that wasn't raised below, or should we consider that issue having to do with, I guess, the self-help remedies and small claims court and those other aspects of the agreement?
Actually, Jeremy Franklin Suzuki was the first one to raise that issue at this court. That issue was never raised by Jeremy Franklin Suzuki at the trial court level. Ms. Ellis's always position has been that the entire contract and the arbitration provision lacked consideration, and that was the trial court's finding of it. The issue of mutuality was never raised by Jeremy Franklin Suzuki at the trial court level. And if you look at the contract, the arbitration provision specifically, there is no mutual promise in that agreement. The exact wording of it is either you or we may choose to resolve this dispute by arbitration, or any of these disputes shall, comma, at your or our election, comma, be resolved by a neutral binding arbitrator. The arbitration provision itself does not mandate or require either party to go through arbitration. It is an election that either party may take or may choose. So even mutuality of obligation is not an issue before this court.
Thank you.
So Ms. Ellis's position is that the contract was never formed. I quickly want to address the entire construction of the arbitration agreement with the contract as a whole. Johnson versus JF Enterprises holds that the contemporaneously signed documents are to be construed as one contract unless otherwise indicated. And the realities of the situation here is that the parties intended for those to be treated as one and the same, as one contract. Nothing indicates otherwise here. When Ms. Ellis went to go buy the car, she did not go to JF Enterprises with the intent of signing into an arbitration agreement. She went in there to buy a car. And that is why it's important to construe the documents together. As we've already addressed the severability and enforceability issue, that the cases that appellant relies on jump ahead because they do not address the formation of the arbitration agreement. All they simply do is presuppose that a valid arbitration agreement already exists, and that's not the case here. The Western District in Bellemere did an analysis very similar to that. In Bellemere, it was a contract formation case, and the dealership again tried to raise the issue of Prima Paint and Buckeye, and the Western District said that those cases presuppose that a valid arbitration agreement exists, and they said it's counterintuitive to suggest that an arbitrator can determine if an arbitration agreement was ever formed. So based upon all of that, this really is an issue of contract formation, and the United States Supreme Court decisions that appellant relies on are not controlling in this case. I would encourage the court to look to the case of Granite Rock from 2010, as that issue specifically dealt with contract formation. And as the court specifically stated, that issues of contract formation are for the courts to decide. And as this court has held in Baker, Robinson, Eaton, and a handful of other cases, that state contract laws can apply to defense of formation. And that's where JF Enterprises, Johnson versus JF Enterprise, comes into play, is that the courts can construe the documents together. United States Supreme Court cases specifically provide that arbitration cannot be compelled if an arbitration agreement was never formed, and that's the situation that we are presenting this court with. So based upon all of that, I would respectfully ask this court, on behalf of Ms. Ellis, to affirm the trial court's ruling. There has been no error that has been alleged in the trial court's finding, most importantly because an arbitration provision cannot be compelled, and a party cannot be compelled to arbitrate a case unless there is an agreement to arbitrate, and that has not happened here. JF Enterprises has the burden of proving that there is a valid arbitration agreement that exists, and they have failed to do so. The trial court found that the arbitration provision was void as it lacked consideration, thereby it was never formed. JF Enterprises has never refuted that or proven otherwise. Therefore, the trial court's finding that the arbitration provision lacked consideration and is void is a factual matter that this court should give deference to and is fully supported by the evidence, and no other inference has been made otherwise for that. Based upon all of this, on behalf of Ms. Ellis, I would respectfully ask this court to affirm the trial court's denial of the motion to compel arbitration. Arbitration cannot be compelled because an arbitration provision was never entered into.
Could you go back and address your argument that it's a factual issue rather than a matter of law that we're deciding?
In Bellemere versus Cable Dahmer, the Western District lays out the steps that should be considered in a motion to compel arbitration. And the first step is that there is a valid arbitration agreement that exists. And the Western District, based upon existing case law, said that that burden is on the appellant, the party seeking to compel arbitration.
What disputed facts do we have in this case?
There are no disputed facts in this case. The only facts in this case is the affidavit from Ms. Ellis that was filed with the court stating the title has never been provided to her. And the courts have held that the existence of an arbitration matter is a factual matter, and deference should be given to the trial court on that. The issue that is to be reviewed de novo is whether arbitration can be compelled, and since arbitration cannot be compelled if no arbitration agreement ever existed, arbitration cannot be compelled in this manner.
Before you sit down, there's mm-hmm. You allege fraud at some point in time in this transaction.
Yes.
Do the cases at all speak to the allegation of fraud either as to the contract or as to the arbitration agreement?
The cases do not specifically deal with the allegation of fraud. What our focus has been on and raised throughout the trial court was a lack of consideration, which makes the entire contract void. And so the issue of fraud would come into play at later points in time regarding other issues, but as to the formation of the contract, the main issue is the lack of consideration.
Are you alleging fraud in the inducement, that you thought you were going to get a title, but there was no intent to provide it? Or what's the fraud allegation?
Initially in the lawsuit, it was fraudulent misrepresentation and unlawful merchandise practicing and conversion that were raised. But the position that Ms. Ellis has always maintained is that title was not delivered, therefore the sale was not valid, therefore there was no valid sale. And so the main issue is the lack of consideration, and then the fraud will come into play at a later point in time.
Is it lack of consideration, or is your claim specifically based upon 301.210?
It's based upon 301.210.
So that's different than a lack of consideration.
The cases that have interpreted Section 301.210, specifically Public Finance versus Shemwell out of the Western District from 1961, have said that failure to provide title results in no consideration, and there is no consideration for the note that the buyer provided. And so the title is the consideration based upon Public Finance versus Shemwell. And Public Finance versus Shemwell has also gone on to say that they will invalidate the entire contract for lack of title, because the parties would not have entered into the contract if they knew that there would not be title delivered and they could not do anything with it. That they would not have entered the so-called valid part if the invalid part did not independently of the invalid part. So I do believe this is an issue of, based upon Section 301.210, of an issue of lack of consideration based upon the case law that has the courts have generated over the years regarding Section 210.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Right, thank you.
If I may address, I believe, two issues. The Bellemere Court, that court was in fact attacking directly the validity of the arbitration agreement, because the dealer in that case didn't sign the arbitration agreement. And the contract documents themselves said, if the dealer doesn't sign the contract, it's not enforceable. And so that was a specific and direct attack on the Bellemere case on the arbitration agreement that was entered into. Second of all, in this case, there is consideration that could be, it is separate for the arbitration agreement. This court in the Baker case said, you can have two specific ways to have consideration for an arbitration agreement. One of them is by the underlying contract. That's one way you can do it. In this case, they're saying that doesn't exist. That was devoid of consideration because of 301.210. But there's also another way you can do it. It's called mutuality of agreement. And in the arbitration agreement, and this was never an issue, that no issue in the trial court level as to whether did both parties agree. So that separate agreement, in and of itself, that arbitration agreement, can stand on its own by its own consideration because of the mutuality of the agreement of the parties.
Counsel, I've looked back again at the arbitration agreement, and it does not use the word formation. It says all sorts of things. At least it says you agree to raise disputes about and contract and tort about and about purchase and credit application. It doesn't say contract formation.
Then I'll stand corrected. I apologize. To the extent that it's,
and it'll speak for itself. We'll look back at it again. But go ahead. You've got another minute.
Actually, I'm done. If you have any other questions.
Always wise.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for a well-argued case. Case will be submitted.